The World Tomorrow.
Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. You're living today in an age of rebellion, an age of violence, lawlessness, of mounting crime, an age where it's becoming chic to flout the law, where it's up to date to rebel, to resort to open ridicule to any and all time-honored institutions, and where it's more popular to rebel against the government, against any and all constituted authority than almost anybody. Now why? What's happening in this Western world of ours, of our great pretensions about civilization and culture and the like? Philosophers, sociologists see in the rebellions of youth perhaps a healthy sign. They think that the youth of today are trying to find and forge some new kind of mores and laws, finding some new set of principles with which to live. And the idea of this and that rebellion is even being used as a clever catchphrase of advertisers who like to appeal to people to join this or that rebellion, who don't have the dynamism to get up during a commercial to open a new beer, or an interest to rebel even. But they say, join this rebellion, be young, be like these rebellious college students on the universities and the campuses of the colleges across and around the world, and especially the Western world of the United States. So today, people say, well, perhaps that's a healthy sign. Maybe these youths are discovering some inner principles of truth. Maybe they are finding some new way by which to live, some new sets of laws or some new standard. So more and more our institutions, oftentimes, as you see in the state of California, the state of Texas, and elsewhere, tax-supported institutions, where absolutely free, quote, education, end quote, is given these youngsters, and our institutions of higher learning are becoming hotbeds of violence, a protective society for the fomenting of more and more rebellion, a sort of a testing ground for revolution, a platform for the expounding of any weird, wild, far-out, nutty thought that creeps into the empty head of some unshaven, beatnik, non-student dropout who can, via his incredible ineptitude, his asinine contempt for proven principles, his almost unbelievable filth and lack of real erudite intellectualism, command an audience on a soapbox in the campus square. So the hippies and the dropouts from society sit around and hoop and holler and say, let's have a love-in where we all hit LSD, sniff glue, and rebel. And all this under the guise of intellectualism. Is that true, intellectualism? Is that intelligence? Well, you know, long ago, the greatest philosopher, who really wasn't a philosopher, but I say it in those terms so you can understand, the greatest philosopher who ever lived said, you shall know them by their fruits. So what are the fruits of this rebellion? What is it producing? What good is it doing? You look at the mess that is being made around the world today by the adult generation, and you simply cannot blame the younger generation for being a little bit disillusioned with it all. You're living in an age of disappointments, of frustrations, of disillusionments, and you're living in an age where governmental leaders are telling you increasingly you have to get used to it all. That you must become accustomed to living in an age of problems without solutions, of predictions of more and more mounting violence. And of course, these cities must comply with it. They're even getting out maps and charts now to show you which cities you can expect the next riots in. It's almost like it's got it all scheduled. It's enough to make you shake your head in utter disbelief of how the press and the news media jump into it all, and like giving the address of someone who apprehended by identification some noted criminal so that his cohorts can go and machine gun the house. So they say, well, you're probably going to have a long, hot summer. Now we predict, they go on, and then comes along list of cities where they're going to be giant riots. So, of course, all the elements in those cities which would be given to riot, if the opportunity presented itself, if there was any form of cohesiveness, any one single driving impulse that could put it all together, begin to say, hey, look at there. All the civil rights leaders and all the others are predicting that we're going to have a riot in this city this year. Well, let's do it then. Let's wait until the middle of July or August and let's have a giant riot. What do you say we go up here and burn all the homes in this and that district? Unbelievable, isn't it? Unbelievable. What we're doing to ourselves today. So the youngsters say, well, the older generation did it. We didn't make the world the way it is, but the older generation says the same thing. You didn't make this world the way it is, but you probably don't like it the way it is. Now, maybe you do. Maybe I'm talking to someone who is so incredibly out of touch with reality, he actually likes the world the way it is. I don't know about that. I've met two or three people like that, but thankfully they're few and far between. Most people are at least aware enough of some of the mounting problems that they realize we must find some solutions. That there must be some way out, or mankind is himself doomed. Most people, if they are willing to admit it, will tell you, yes, that's right, we're on a collision course, and unless some totally unforeseen changes occur, unless some completely unprepared for and unexpected solutions come along here on the horizon pretty soon, then mankind himself is absolutely doomed. And our vaunted societies are going to come crumbling down around us. And we're going to fall into demise, collapse, and decay just as surely as the ancient empires of Egypt, of Greece and of Rome, of Persia, of Tyre and Sidon and Ashkelon and Ashdod, some of the great city-states of the past, except our demise is going to be more complete than theirs because there won't even be a monument to attest to a former grandeur. There won't be a wiggling, quivering form of life left on the face of this earth in another 20 years, mark my words, unless some great unforeseen event comes along to stop it first. And we who are supposed to be the bastion of Christianity, the bulwark against the darkness of sadistic brutality and bestiality, the people who went out in World War II to fight the war, to end all wars, the people who, after they squeezed the last little drop of toothpaste out of their tubes, carefully folded them up and sent them in to help with the war effort because we wanted to save the lead. The people who cheerfully went to the meat counter with their ration books, and the people who, when they drove past the gasoline station and said, sorry, no gas. Well, maybe they griped a little, but the people who put their stars in their windows and proudly displayed the fact that one of their sons was overseas fighting, an attempt of a madman to usher in upon this world a German-made utopia, Deutschland-style, for 1,000 years, which we could only see as incredible bestiality. And we fought the war to end all wars, did we? Well, maybe somehow we could say we won the war, but how utterly have we lost the peace? How utterly have we failed in the years since? How utterly have we totally denied and ignored the predictions of everyone who said what must be done, but which was not done, and which isn't being done today. So in the aftermath of World War II, we have fought more than 40 wars. Two of them on such gigantic scales they sapped and drained the strength of many nations. One of them in progress right now in Vietnam. And even that isn't even a tiny little bit of the kind of a domestic war we fight. Why, there are more people being killed inside the United States by gunshot wounds every single year than there are in Vietnam by far. And there are more people being killed inside the United States almost any weekend, almost any week, by automobile accidents, by virtual criminals at the wheel of an automobile than there are in Vietnam. As a matter of fact, you can take some of our totals of automobile accidents, and I can prove to you, as I gave you a recent statistic on the World Tomorrow program, that we've killed far more people since the advent of the motor car in the United States than have died in all of our wars, including the Revolutionary War in 1776, till the very latest kill figures of Vietnam. Yet we want to somehow preserve our society. Now, all of this ferment that you see around you, of racism, of the promise of a long, hot summer, of violence, of student rebellion, and of our courts becoming obsessed, it seems, with the rights of the criminal instead of the rights of the victim. All of the disillusionment and the frustration around you is part of a great picture, part of a great overall picture, a plan that is being worked out here below, and it fits into something that has been foretold and predicted centuries before. You are living in the close of an age, and you are seeing about you the death throes of a society. And most of us haven't the wit or the wisdom to admit it, Instead, we want to play. And you take a look at some of the dull-eyed, frustrated dropouts from society that call themselves intellectuals on our campuses. Who, instead of solving any problems, even though they say they're disillusioned and they didn't make the world, the adults did. They can see the mess of the world, the population explosion, the international problems, the race, the hatred, the crime, the wars, and no peace. So what do? Solve it? No, they take it one step further. They descend into animalistic depravity, into licentiousness, perversion, drug addiction, various stimulants to live in a sort of a self-created dream world of hallucinations and let the rest of the world go by, like Nero, who in his insane mind fiddled grotesquely while Rome burned. So our would-be intellectuals sit cross-legged on the campus lawn and fiddle with a posy with their long hair and spittle dribbling over their beard in their ineptitude and their insane drug-addled minds and claim to be free thinkers. Bourgeois and balderdash. Dropouts from reality is what they are. And all this in the name of free thinking. Instead of finding solutions, these would-be emancipators and free thinkers accomplish nothing but further chaos in a world they've grown to hate. And they only add to the problems. Instead of finding some new moral standards, they creep back into those of savage Africa, returning to the mindless animal impulses of illiterate, uneducated savages. It's about time you began to appraise what's happening around you in this modern world of yours that is coming apart at the seams and began to admit the truth of reality. People don't like to see it the way it is. Well, it is that way, whether you like to see it or not. Our society is coming apart at the seams, and those of you who are privileged not to live in the big cities perhaps can't realize it so much as those in New York, Detroit, Chicago, in Los Angeles, and Portland, and Seattle, and San Francisco, and Denver, and Houston, and Dallas. But the bigger the city you live in, the more you see the problems around us today. Unfortunately, crime statistics and all the rest of it prove it isn't confined to urban America, nor is it confined to America. We are somehow on a worldwide binge of insanity and crime, and of the desire to get ours while the getting is good, and to play hide-and-go-seek. To hide our eyes from the reality that presses in upon us, and to go seek our own physical, material, creature comforts and pleasures, just like Nero, who fiddled while Rome burnt. Yet you cannot see in all of this any real hope for the future. And some empty-headed philosopher who sits around and tells you that he thinks all of these dropouts and beatniks are going to come up with some great, glittering new set of standards, by venereal disease without limit, by illegitimacy with no known bounds, by doing away with the very sanctity of marriage and destroying the very building blocks of any society, and drifting into a kind of an inane language which is a sort of a cacophony of grunts and garbled language in between English and maybe some African tongue, where you can't even understand what these empty-headed boobs are trying to tell you. Anybody who says that's a healthy sign must believe in taking a bath in a sewer. It's incredible. And you know, the people who have just about had it, as we say, clear up to here, ought to begin to do something besides just decrying it. But you don't see anybody applauding decency and morality. You don't get very many sales for your book if you're talking about purity and morality. You're not going to get very much sensationalism out of good and wholesomeness. And that which is moral, that which has integrity, that which stands for permanence and stability, is not going to sell many copies, and it's not going to pack the movie theaters, and it's not going to sell the advertisers in a television series that they ought to put many hundreds of thousands of dollars into a television series and advertise their product. And so it is that today, wherever you look, whether it's government, whether it's religion, whether it's the social order, whether it's science or industry, whether it's the economy, whether it's the field of education, you see dissidence, you see dissolution, you see a breakdown of mores, laws, and standards, and you see a watering down of principle, you see a compromise with absolute evil and crime. and continually the very ones who ought to be in the forefront to tell you that you're living in a time that has great meaning and purpose to it, that there is a great purpose being worked out here below, and that prophecies are being fulfilled, that predictions of yesteryear in the pages of your Bible are coming to pass all around you right now. Instead of telling people that, they're telling you God is dead and you can't prove the existence of God and evolution is true, and they're telling you you've got to sort of hope that some of these 13, 15, 19-year-old kids are going to save you from the world that your elders have left you. It's almost too much to stand. There are a series of questions that I have before me from university freshmen that show what our youngsters are being taught inside the classrooms. The letter I had the other day told about the incredulity of one student who found his philosophy professor coming to class in jeans and overalls. He wore a beard, he wore glasses, and not that that's bad if you need them. But the overall effect must have been really something to behold, and this particular one just grunted. He didn't have the attention of his students. This one visitor to the classroom was utterly appalled to find the students walking out 10 minutes before the class was over while the professor groaned on. And they all smoked freely in the classroom and chatted amongst themselves. Now, these products of our modern universities who go out waving their degree, which is about as worthless as wallpaper, in most cases, I don't say that the poor kid doesn't know how to maybe turn on an ultracentrifuge. I don't say the poor kid can't tell you about neutrons, electrons, protons, and photons. I don't say that the kid can't wire a switchboard or maybe feed information into a computer. I do say the poor kid doesn't know what he is. I say he doesn't know where he's going. I say he hasn't been taught why he is alive. I say he's been given no hope for the future, and he has been given no understanding of the past. And he has no grasp of the present. And when you don't know those things, brother, you're not educated, you're kind of stupid. When you've been to some kind of a university or an educational institution which purports to teach you knowledge, and yet cannot tell you what you are and why you're on this earth and what all of history means and attune you to it, and can't help you decipher and make some kind of sense and shape and meaning out of the present, and cannot give you any hope for the future, then you're not educated. You're not truly educated. You've just had some of your doubts picked apart. It's no wonder one student wrote, of all places, excuse me for saying so, to a newspaper. But then, once in a great while, some newspaper article may be right. I don't know. I've just never seen one. Maybe I will one of these days. I told you, I think, about the fellow who came to interview me. Now, the World Tomorrow program, you know, goes around the world. It's broadcast up the length and the breadth of the Philippines. People in Hobart and Launceston, Tasmania, hear it. They hear it all over Australia, out in the western part in Perth and to the gold fields of Kalgoorlie and Coolgardie and places up and down the length and breadth of Australia and on the island of Guam and Saipan and Formosa and China. They hear it in the Spanish language up and down the length and breadth of Central and South America. They hear it in French high in the Swiss Alps and all over France. They hear it in the German tongue behind the Iron Curtain. People in Czechoslovakia, Romania, Hungary, and Yugoslavia listen. They hear it in English all over Europe and Scandinavia and up and down the length and breadth of England and Wales and Scotland and all over the United States, sometimes 5, 6, and 7 times a day. All over Canada. Out in Hawaii and up in Alaska. There isn't any part of the habitable earth where you could not, with a good radio, pick up the World Tomorrow. Now, we publish a magazine read by perhaps 4 million people, the Plain Truth Magazine, 52 pages, full color throughout, a quality magazine with full color news photos that scoop the big magazines. A very, very beautiful magazine, and yet free of charge. There are 3 college campuses located in Pasadena, California, in Brigittwood in England, and Big Sandy in Texas. It's a good-sized effort. It has a purpose behind it. This newspaper interviewer wanted to write me up for his local readers. And I said, well, have you ever heard the World Tomorrow program? He said, no, he hadn't. I said, well, have you ever read the Plain Truth magazine? He said, well, no, he hadn't. Well, do you know about the Ambassador Colleges? Well, no, he didn't. Well, did he want any of the literature, and did he want a prepared story? No, he just wanted to ask me a few questions. Now, what about this and that? He asked me a few questions about a meeting that was going on, a few other questions. He took a picture, I think it was with a Polaroid land camera, and once or twice he scribbled something on a yellow scratch pad. The interview lasted 20 minutes, and with great confidence, this man went back to his typewriter in his office and wrote an article which appeared in print, circulated among the homes of perhaps 50 to 70,000 readers, who read all of the straight-from-the-shoulder story about this worldwide program. From a reporter who'd never heard it, who didn't really know it existed, who had never read about it, who had not studied it, who hadn't researched it, and who didn't even want a prepared release concerning it. So I'm sorry, let me apologize again. I'm not picking on all newspapers. It's just that I realize, being a speaker that is heard around the world myself, the awesome responsibility of one who tries to teach and to talk to other people about other people and about conditions and circumstances and things, that he had better know what he's talking about and be accurate. And that you don't start telling people about some institution or somebody unless you research it, unless you know what you're talking about. And so when I see the clergy not knowing the Bible, claiming they can't even prove God's existence, and yet pulling themselves up to their full height in the pulpit and trying to tell you about God, it looks just about as inept and inane to me as a newspaper reporter trying to, without any knowledge, without any research, without any preparation, trying to give you an article telling you all the succinct and necessary factors about some worldwide work of which he knows utterly nothing. Well, here comes a letter from a college student that asked a newspaper, what can I believe? I was raised in a very religious family. Last fall, I moved here and enrolled as a freshman in a local college. Up to now, I'd never questioned the faith of my fathers. Now, I doubt everything. Well, listen to that, world. That's what happens to college students. That's what you parents can expect when you send Junior away to college. He not only will doubt everything, he'll sample everything, and he'll do everything. And so will she. That is many of them. That is most of them. That is almost all of them, but maybe not quite all. One of my professors asks me questions about God and Christ, and then he smiles at my answers. The other students laugh. I've talked with girls in my residence hall. Half of them have lost their faith. Is science really opposed to religion? This student asked a newspaper that question. Is there a God? Please help me. I'm in a whirlpool of doubt. Here's the help the student got. Answer from the newspaper. A good many college students go through the same questioning period. God exists, and in your heart you know it. Faith gives you strength. I've mailed you the names of three religious leaders in our community. Each one of them has helped others in the whirlpool you're in. See one of them soon. All right, so far, so good. You've got to hand it to that newspaper writer. Let's see the kind of an answer this student may have expected when he got to the three clerics. Here are some statements by leading theologians in the field. One, a minister principal of a denominational college, said this, and I quote, the Bible doesn't prove God's existence, but it does reveal that it's a question of faith. Another leading religious leader said, there is no proof of anything. Another one said, the Bible is not a scientific textbook. It contains no proof either that God does or does not exist. Another one said, quote, you can't prove God's existence because that is something beyond man's reasoning power. A well-known evangelist said, quote, it's a very interesting thing that the Bible never once tries to prove the existence of God, end quote. What? What on earth kind of a statement is that? A Bible that says, prove me now herewith. A Bible that tells you that which may be known of God is revealed to them, the pagan philosophers of ancient Rome, and is clearly understood, being seen by the things that are made. A Bible that says, I am God and there is none else. Have you not known, have you not heard from the beginning, has it not been told you that I am God and there is none beside me? A Bible that comes out with such absolute statements as this is not trying to prove the existence of God.
So you see, the student is perplexed and in a self-confessed whirlpool of doubt in the institution. I mean by this the educational institution. So he's told, go check with the clergy. So the clergy says, well, I don't really know. I can't prove a thing. Where does that leave the student? It leaves the student exactly where he was. But my friends, it's about time you began to realize there is a source to which you can go to prove it. And that the chances are those who set themselves up as teachers of that source themselves do not know it. And they won't really come out and tell you what it says. When people try to tell you you cannot prove God exists, they're telling you something that either they are sincerely misinformed and just don't know any better, or what. You'll have to make up your own mind. But I can prove it. I'm not bragging. That's a statement that any minister of the gospel should be able to make. And science, when it is true science, does not conflict with the Bible. Every single month in the Plain Truth magazine are articles right straight from the shoulder that prove this quite clearly. And coming in the next number is going to be one about the ants and how they really get under evolutionist skin. And they crawl all over their theories. Now, every single month in the Plain Truth magazine is an article along that line, but that's not all. Many other articles that are so vitally important in this age of rebellion and lawlessness in which you live, that give weight and shape and meaning and sense to this time, and that show you there is some good news beyond, that there is hope for the future. The Plain Truth magazine comes to grips with the really big issues of today and gives you the truth about it, and many times articles in the light of the prophecies of the Bible telling you about specific events long before they occur. Here's one in the current number about how it was nearly, believe it or not, 3,000 years ago that British Prime Minister Wilson's visit over to Germany and their insistence that they must get into the common market and their desire to get into the EEC today and the problems that are confronting Great Britain today, all of these things with a hat-in-hand visit to try to get help from Europe, were predicted in Bible prophecy centuries ago. And your future is involved in Britain's hopeless bid for help from her former enemy. Just as much as your future, whether you live in anywhere from Florida to Washington in the United States, was involved in the Battle of Britain in 1940 and 41, even before the United States got into the war. That strange affinity for those two nations is something you ought to look into. But also in this current number of the Plain Truth magazine, this article on what colleges and universities do not tell you, and about higher education, who ought to pay for it, the facts that every prospective student ought to know. Now along this line of whether or not God's existence can be proved, philosophers in colleges tell you no. They say that science has disproved it, but the scientists that they quote tell you no, they haven't either. They say they don't have any proof, and there are broad, yawning depths in their theories, and these quotations are fearlessly given in a Plain Truth magazine where you see by the admissions of the leading evolutionists themselves that they have proved nothing of the kind. Now, in the current number is this one on a whale of a tale or the dilemma of the doubting dolphins. What about them? Did they evolve? Can you prove it? You'll find out when you get your name on the mailing list of the Plain Truth magazine and write for these booklets, Does God Exist and the Proof of the Bible, and be sure to get the booklet that tells you more about this program than any other, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like, the booklet by the title of this program, The World Tomorrow. They're free of charge, no price, if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters at your station. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.